So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review.
You better find yourself someplace to hide and keep praying nobody ever finds you.
Try these on.
Look, you crazy mother.
Put these on.
Hey! Stay away from me!
I'm telling you, you dumb son of a...
I'm trying to save you and your family's life.
You couldn't even save your own!
I'm giving you a choice. Either put on these glasses or start eating that trash can.
Not this year.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Come on. Come on.
You ain't the first son of a bitch to wake up out of their dream.
Is that...
Brother, life's a bitch. She's back in heat.
Welcome to Review Away. I am John Pollock, along with the newest television sensation, Wei Ting.
Yeah, man.
Stop. How does it feel, Wei? Why do you have an entourage now outside of our broom closet?
Yeah, I got to take off these sunglasses.
Everyone else is obeying you now.
That's right. Well, I am a part of the media now. You know what I mean? And
your job is to create material and force people to consume it.
And to marry and reproduce.
Yes.
I don't know how we do that through a wrestling podcast, but that is our aim. Yeah, the very successful debut of Review Raw, I have to say.
I've watched it multiple times.
Yeah, wow. I can't believe it. I better not actually jinx myself.
Like, what was your favorite camera angle?
Oh, I'll have to say the left one, which is very nice. Yeah, I think the center one maybe.
That's mine.
That's yours.
Yeah,
that's
I like when we're both in there. I like to see who the subject is addressing.
Yeah, you know, I really liked it when our names showed up, like so that people can see who's talking.
Yeah,
I really like that part.
I'm really hoping this takes things to the next level in terms of my name being spelled properly by people online.
I think perhaps.
I think this is a turning point for me.
Yeah,
it's the first thing that came to mind.
I also really liked it when, you know, you could hear our hear the sound from the TV. And it's also in color.
Yeah, it is. You know what wasn't in color? My hotel room television over the weekend. I was in Montreal. Mm-hmm. Black and white television.
Seriously?
Yeah, I'm not kidding.
Not like, was it HD black and white or just black and white?
It was HD black and white.
That's unusual.
We had three rooms with me and my friends.
Why were you in Montreal, first of all?
As I told you on Monday, it was my good friend Eric's bachelor party. He's getting married in July. He's getting married on July the 11th. Does that mean anything to you?
No.
He is getting married on the night of Jose Aldo, Conor McGregor, the biggest fight of the year. But I am not. I would be the biggest dick.
Oh, so you're not going to watch that? You're not doing that? The show that day?
No,
Damn, wow. That's a commitment.
Yeah. Well, you see,
if it was a lesser friend, clearly you would choose.
Well, you joke, but last year, my friend that I've known the longest, my friend Jessica, got married on the night of UFC 175, which was Chris Weidman, Lyoto Machida. And I was going to the wedding, and it was about 2 weeks out, you and I were told we're getting sent down to Vegas. And I seriously was like, I need to think about this. I did not want to miss my friend's wedding. It's like I have known this girl since I was 8 years old. And we went to Vegas, and I won't lie, I felt like a shitty, shitty friend missing her wedding. So this year, I cannot do. I'm one of the best men, so I'm in the wedding party.
You can't really,
so I can't miss this one.
No, yeah, I've come to realize that I've had to miss more and more things as a result of doing these preview shows for the Fight Network.
We sound like pro wrestlers.
I know. Oh, boo-hoo.
I missed a lot of birthdays, yeah. A lot of work.
Yeah. I got this job. I got to watch fights. Boo-hoo.
I don't care. There's times that it's very tough.
There are tougher jobs.
I would love for some of these people who criticize to don't think of what we do as, oh, my God, they get to go and watch WrestleMania. I want you to be on 3 hours of sleep and have to drive from province to province to get home, and you've got to watch Impact in the 2.5 hours of free time you have before you have to go out and work for another 5 hours.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't have
to. And then do it every single week.
No, I don't have to do that.
Well, I do. Did you watch Impact last week?
Yeah, of course. It was a debut on the Fight Network.
Did you watch it?
Yeah.
Yeah. What match was your favorite?
It was the main event, of course.
Yeah?
It was Kurt Angle and Bobby Lashley.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Tell me about the finish and what that's going to lead to.
Why are you doing this? Why?
Why are you avoiding such an easy question?
Why the need to talk about something in the past?
You know what the best part about Impact was? In the U.S. version, they're promoting this new show called Ghost Asylum, mm-hmm. where these guys go out and, I guess, put ghosts into an asylum. So they wanted to have some interaction with members of the TNA roster. And this did not air on the Fight Network version because Fight Network has yet to get the rights to Ghost Asylum, but I now know it's on the number one most wanted list.
We're working on it.
Ghost Asylum. That is the goal.
Reveal a ghost.
Well, these guys from the show walk out into the woods, and who's having a little campfire but the Revolution of James Storm,
wow.
Koya, and Abyss. And then you remember the barn of James Storm that he would take the Revolution members out to and that he would preach from. Well, there's a backstory now on this barn. Okay. A man died in this barn years ago, and the guys from Ghost Asylum are going to do an investigation because it may be a murder. And it ends. This is going to be an episodic series of vignettes.
Oh, my.
Where we are going to learn the origins of James Storm's barn. And unfortunately, I personally feel that, promotion aside, I think Fight Network should take this version because I want to know week by week the status of James Storm's barn.
Hmm. Yeah, you do. You'll tune in specifically.
Oh, I can't wait.
Show?
I can't wait.
Okay.
I wish we could get Destination America here to follow the saga.
It's not like it's not a reality show, this Ghost Asylum thing?
I don't know what it is. I've never watched it. It was premiering last week, I think.
Dude, it sounds terrible.
It sounds like something Nate needs to watch and give us updates on every week.
Yeah.
Even though I don't believe he has Destination America.
Let's add more to their plate.
Anyway. Well, today we're going to be chatting about something even crazier. We're reviewing a movie, They Live.
Mm-hmm.
This was a movie that was – we and Wei were discussing in San Jose. Oh, what are we going to review when we get back? And you, Wei, multiple times said, I want to review They Live. I really want to review this. What sparked this interest in you to watch this movie that came out in 1988?
Well, I'd always heard about it, you know, and obviously some of the classic lines from this movie. And I always knew of it as, you know, a Roddy Piper movie that was maybe his most popular. And but I never thought that much about it, you know. I just thought, oh, another wrestler's movie is probably, you know, just another really bad, cheesy movie. But then, like, I saw this thing on YouTube. It's called The Pervert's Guide to Ideology. And it's with this philosopher named Slavoj Sizek. I'm saying it all.
Nailed it.
But whatever. Anyway, so it's actually it's basically a little documentary, not even a documentary, but like a little movie itself about film criticism, and it uses They Live as one of the principal examples off the top of the movie. And if you actually go to our Pro Boards feedback thread, you'll see a little clip of this. But I didn't even know the concept of They Live until I saw this little thing where, I mean, I was just so interested in the concept of, you know, somebody putting on a pair of sunglasses and all of a sudden seeing the truth in, you know, media messages. As somebody who works in the media and thinks about this stuff a lot, I was enamored by the idea immediately. And so I really wanted to see this movie, starring Roddy Piper, no less.
Yes, this was his big hit after – this ties in really well when we reviewed WrestleMania 3 because – it's a well-known story. Roddy Piper and John Carpenter met at WrestleMania 3. And then this movie came out the following year. And this was the biggest movie Roddy Piper was ever involved in. Right. I mean, this has become a cult classic this many years later where Wei Ting is asking about They Live in 2015.
I'm surprised you hadn't seen it.
I had never seen this movie. I kind of am the opposite of people. When there's a wrestler in a movie, most people are like, oh, you're going to go see that? It actually has the opposite effect on me where it's like, I'm going to try and avoid that movie.
Yeah.
And I just – seeing a wrestler in a movie has very little redeeming value. The only movie I can remember that I was genuinely excited to watch was See No Evil because it was going to be in the theater. I'm a big fan of horror movies, and it's the Kane character, which has always had a soft spot in my heart.
And I think we're talking about like wrestling starring vehicles, you know what I mean? Not necessarily like The Rock in Fast Five or, you know, we're talking about something featuring like a Mr. Nanny or like typically bad movies if a wrestler is in it. And maybe that's why
– if it's so bad, I will have a curiosity, but only if it were for this show. I could never imagine. I never imagine in my leisure time just sitting back and popping open the Marine 4 with the Miz and Summer Rae,
which
we really blew an opportunity. They were having the worldwide exclusive screening over WrestleMania weekend. We could have watched it right before the NXT show on the Friday night, and we blew it. We fucking blew it.
Yeah. Well, there's always next
the fourth year. One. They've pumped four movies out of that franchise.
I can't believe it. Wow.
From John Cena to Ted DiBiase Jr. to The Miz. What a lineage of Marines.
Yeah, we should do like a marathon screening.
No.
How about that? They're doing Avengers marathons. We should try to hold the very first Marine marathon.
Are you excited for this sequel
Marine
at the
Land.
End of the month of
Marine
the Avengers?
Marine Land is what we'll call it.
Marine Land. No, we're never going to do that.
I'm excited, but you know, I'm not actually that excited about it. I feel like by this point, Marvel's already got so much planned further ahead that this feels already old.
Was the Avengers the first one? Was a good movie, right?
Really good, yeah. All the Marvel movies have been pretty good.
I'm so terrible with like sequels because I will always have seen the first movie, and then when the second one comes around, dude, I can't remember a thing about the first one. Yeah. Like zero recall. I would have to go back and watch it, the first one before I watch the second
again.
What did you
think of Furious 7? This is an appropriate time to talk about it.
Well, again, we kind of hinted about it on Monday night, but let's...
But we had so much to talk about on Monday.
That's true. There was a lot.
We really had to move
on. We might have just raced through it and missed the full review to my satisfaction.
Fast and Furious.
But you and I both saw Furious 7 over the weekend. Our, I guess, $20 went towards their $143 million that they grossed over the weekend. One of the biggest weekend openings in movie history.
Mm-hmm.
This is crazy.
Yeah.
I remember seeing the first one in 2001, and then they announced a sequel. I was like, they're doing a second one? Like, one was clearly enough.
Oh, dude, the first one was just such a broing, you know, like, not even, like, I'm talking
the
about...
The first one was good.
No, it wasn't.
Oh,
it wasn't.
It was good.
It actually was good, but, like, it really was one of the first to introduce that whole genre. You remember Torque?
No.
Dude,
I remember Gone in 60 Seconds, which came out the year before.
But Torque was like the motorcycle version of Fast and the Furious. And just basically,
I do remember Torque.
Just a ton of like eye candy, you know, the fucking Nas. Nas. And then you see the camera go into the tubes. And like, just like every... Just like the just big, big, loud explosions, colorful, just action movie eye candy overload. So, I mean, I watched it, but I didn't think too much of it. It just seemed like a very superficial type of movie. But somehow, this thing franchise seemed to slowly start dying. You know, Fast 2 was less interesting, and then Fast Tokyo Drift didn't even have the lead actors. But somehow they decided to bring it back for this fourth installment with the full cast.
Yeah, they really kind of – it was almost like just completely reinvigorated the franchise with the fourth one.
Completely resuscitated it with almost a different focus. It wasn't just so much about eye candy anymore. It still had a lot of that, but it was a lot more about the story and the characters and the relationships between the characters.
Yeah, and that's – you know, they introduced Dwayne Johnson to the franchise and – this thing has just become this gigantic – one of the biggest franchises in action movie history, clearly. Let's talk about the seventh one, because this was the very difficult one where Paul Walker died before filming was done, and they had to use a – one of his – was his brother?
They used two of his brothers as stand-ins, as well as a big collection of like previous footage and footage that they had shot. This movie, it's actually interesting that I'm talking to you about this because you and I found out Paul Walker died the day of your wedding.
That's right.
We found out during your wedding. In fact, it was the talk of the wedding at that point. People didn't care about you and your love with your wife anymore. It was just, oh, did you hear Paul Walker died? He was so good looking. I remember that was the overwhelming sentiment that evening.
Did you know who Paul Walker was?
I actually didn't give a shit about it at the time. Like, because, I mean, I watched the Fast and Furious. I watched the first couple movies, and I didn't think anything of it. But then since then, I went back and watched all the good ones. And then I started to feel sad. But before, I was like, okay, whatever. It's just
I first saw him in Jeepers Creepers, which I've never had so such extreme reactions to, because the first hour of that movie is incredible and the last hour is horrible.
Right. Yeah,
that's it.
That can happen.
But how did you think they pulled off everything with Paul Walker? Like, clearly they wrote him out of the series.
Yeah, I
don't want to ruin too much, but no, man, I think everyone in the world saw this movie on the weekend.
Okay, whatever. Spoiler alert. I won't even try to like talk about spoilers, but I think I just want to talk about, you know, like if you're that concerned about it, maybe skip forward.
There were a lot of spoilers in this movie, actually,
on the cars. but basically, I think I'm a lot. This is not the best of the series. Far from it. This is not even maybe the best of the last four. You know, and but
the last two I held in pretty high regard. Like, I love those movies, and I was anticipating this movie a lot with my friends. My friends friggin' loved this movie. I was much more reserved on this seventh one.
This movie, though, is maybe the most emotional of the few because of the circumstances surrounding it. And maybe, you know, in hindsight, from a behind-the-scenes perspective, it certainly would be the most interesting one. Thinking about how they were able to pull this together, what they had to rewrite in that script to you know, fit this. And I read an article that said they basically used a collection of, you know, existing footage with him, footage that they like CGI, a ton of CGI using Peter Jackson's company. And some scenes were very obvious, but some scenes weren't. And I think that they had to rely on a lot of tricks, you know, like often you won't see the Paul Walker shot from the face, like close-ups of him.
Right.
And
like that whole last scene on the beach, could see it was long shots.
Yeah, that was almost like obvious, like they wanted you to know. Like, and it kind of worked to give it sort of like this – like almost like an angelic feel to it. But there are some other scenes that I came to realize afterwards were shot after he died that I had no idea. That
I'm officially going to call this review review away. We're going to be reviewing two movies on this show. I think we're going to spend as much time on Furious 7 as we are They Live. Probably. So you're getting an impromptu double review. This is like our Money in the Bank cash-in.
Yes. Anyway, I came to realize some of the scenes afterwards, like that parking garage scene.
Yeah, I saw you post something about how that fight scene, the Tony Jaa fight scene, was all done with the replacements.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much of that, and like the studio is smart enough to not reveal any of that stuff because they don't want anybody to be picking.
They want them to guess.
Apart. Exactly. Yeah. And that's part of the fun of watching this movie is, you know.
It's going to have a lot of rewatch value, I imagine, with people to go back and
I really can't wait for the director's commentary where maybe they'll never reveal it, but I think they did a.
I want the Vin Diesel commentary. Dude, that man is so fascinating to me. It's like he's everything I hate about just actors. And he is, to me, this incredible stereotype that has. Like, his name is Vin Diesel. Oh, like, some marketing company spent millions coming up with.
It's like an NXT.
A marketing plan for Vin Diesel.
It's a WWE name. Like, it's like, what is it?
Like, this guy fell out of the sky of 2000 pop culture as Vin Diesel, and he's got to assimilate to the future in acting.
Yeah.
Yo, that's my family.
People have it's like there were betting games of how many times he would say
family. I don't want friends. I've got family.
But I love Vin Diesel, man.
Vin Diesel's great.
From the time I watched him in Boiler Room, I was like, this dude is someone to watch. And at that point in time, when The Rock was getting into all his movies, they were all saying, man, this guy's just trying to be a cheap knockoff of Vin Diesel. I'm like, god damn, 2015, Vin Diesel should be on his knees thanking Dwayne Johnson for what he has brought to the... How much do you think Vin Diesel cleared in this movie? I have no idea.
He was an executive producer.
Oh, wow.
So,
guy's got some coin coming his way.
I'm sure he's very happy. But... You know, what did you think of The Rock in this one? This was a smaller role for him.
Way smaller role. Up until where he breaks out of the hospital, I was like, is this going to be
literally.
It for him? He was in one scene at the beginning, and then he disappears for 80% of the movie.
Yeah.
But boy, does he make up for it at the end. And I don't want to ruin too much for anyone out there, but it's ridiculous. And this whole movie is ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
It's... What I have enjoyed about the last couple of Fast and Furious movies is that it is ridiculous, but they somehow tied it all that there was enough of a connection to a story, to something that I was cool with it. And for whatever reason, this one to me is like, okay, the balloon is off the string and we're just off into outer space, which is where this franchise might be heading for the eighth movie. But it was...
This one was definitely, a lot more unbelievable, especially that last scene. Action scene, I'll say. It seemed to drift off into more...
a dude... A parking lot imploded on a man. There was a drive off of a cliff. There were drives across buildings. And these people were fine. There is no blood. There are no scratches. Everyone's fine.
Well, it's an action movie. But it felt like the previous movies had a lot more they're just as ridiculous. But this one, I think, relied on a lot more, I don't know, I'll say action movie cliches, you know. But
the fork in the road – pretty much literally is the bus scene, which that was in the trailer. I'm not ruining the scene where Paul Walker has to sprint in slow motion up this bus that's going off a cliff. And that's the moment. It's choose your own adventure. You either are with this or this is going to totally turn you off. But that's where this movie is going.
Oh, man. To me, like, the highlight of the movie, aside from the last scene, the very emotional final scene, was that middle sequence starting with the airplane drop, man. Some of you guys might have already seen it from the trailers, but, like, goddamn, like, these cars falling out of these airplanes with parachutes on them, all the way leading up to Paul Walker jumping off of that cliff on that was so good. That was really, really, really good. Anyway, what about Rhonda? What do you think of Rhonda?
I thought she had a way bigger role. She was in one scene.
Mm-hmm.
She was in one scene.
It was really just a cameo.
And there were – that's essentially all it was.
Gina had a bigger role than
Gina. Gina had a much bigger role, much, much bigger role. And, you know, the limited dialogue Rhonda Rousey had, I don't know if acting is necessarily her next step if fighting – ends.
It was very awkward. Very awkward. And I think that's why, like, come to think of it, maybe that's why I enjoyed the WrestleMania bit with her so much, because I knew that she is untested as an actor, and I knew that she could fuck up at any moment in front of those, you know, 70,000 people. And that's
the tightrope effect.
That was sort of the tension for me. And the fact that she didn't really screw up made the whole thing come across, like, maybe more perfect than it actually would have been. But here... I thought she was scripted very awkwardly.
She shouldn't have even been scripted to talk. I mean, everything about her was – she was there for a fight scene, for her physicality. The words were the biggest negative and they had no attachment to the plot. She wasn't advancing anything. She was there for a fight scene.
Yeah, and I was even disappointed by the fight scene. You know, I thought they shot it too tight. I thought they shot it maybe with too many cuts, and you didn't even get enough of a reference to, you know, her judo or her no arm bars. Sort of, I mean, that probably was a big spoiler for a lot of people, but like no, nothing that said this was Ronda Rousey. You know, you had a bit of a, like a hip toss here and there, but nothing that was that great.
Wrestling fans will be much happier with the Dwayne Johnson, Jason Statham fight.
Sure.
There's a payoff for you in that, again. Ridiculous scene.
It was no They Live fight scene, let's say.
No, it didn't go as long. what a difference in just where we are when it comes to action scenes from 1988 to 2015.
I'll say I enjoyed the They Live fight scene more than anything. I mean, no dropping cars out of airplanes in this one, but I love that. I really like the fight scene, though.
Final thing on Furious 7. I think it's a given they're going to do an eighth film.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to see an eighth film? Because to me, this one wrapped it up. The last one, they did this awesome end off where they introduced Jason Statham to the franchise, and you were left with, oh, my God, I can't wait to see this next movie. Nothing was set up in this next one. Everything was tied up. It seemed like this was the end.
You can't really, you know, tease a new bad guy with the ending of this movie, this particular one.
Yeah, but they also, I mean...
But they also didn't kill anybody. They didn't even kill Jason Statham. They didn't kill a lot of people.
After this movie, though, I don't feel much of a need to have to see him.
I thought he was actually... I thought he was good in certain parts, but I thought he would just... They never explained why, how he was able to just pop up everywhere. I thought that was a little too convenient. So I didn't love him as a villain, but I am interested in seeing more because I feel like, you know, they'll probably still be somewhat respectful to, you know, the memory of the Paul Walker character and probably maybe bring him up once in a while. But I just think that these are fun movies. And listen, there's all this money.
Consume.
Exactly. Marry and reproduce. Obey. They're not just going to leave that.
They will reproduce many of these Fast and Furious movies. There's no way they're not making another one.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, they never made a sequel to They Live. They only had to live once.
Characters die.
That is true. This movie, produced by John Carpenter. Are you a John Carpenter fan?
No, not really.
Have you ever seen Halloween?
No, I have not.
This movie, I was just reading up on this before we started this, they had to move the release date of this to avoid Halloween 4, which was also being released that month.
Oh, okay. Did he direct that one?
I don't think he did. I think he was done with the Halloween franchise by that point, and that could be completely wrong.
Okay, whatever.
I hate when you ask me these questions, because this show, people make me...
You usually have the answers for him.
This was director Dwight H. Little.
Okay.
Did Halloween 4.
All right, let's move on.
Okay. Now, yes, it features Roddy Piper, and it co-stars Keith David, who plays the role of Frank.
Yeah.
And
I was trying to remember where I know this guy from.
Me too. And it was driving me insane. And here's Keith David from They Live.
We can't be the only ones who can see. We got to find the people who made these.
Maybe they've always been with us. Those things out there. Maybe they love it. Seeing us hate each other. Watching us kill each other off. Feeding on our own cold fucking hearts.
Now, guy's got a beautiful voice. I mean, something that, I mean, action movies is not where I would pitch this man to be going. And I looked up on IMDb. I'm like, God, this guy's done everything. He has been in every... thing imaginable. He's had quite the career. But that voice just stuck in my head. So I just racked my brain for hours and hours, and then I needed to take a break. So I popped on the WWE Network to take a break.
Oh, shut up. No
way. And just decided to watch something and to get my mind off of Keith David.
It was a war 10 years in the making as sports entertainment's reigning champion was challenged by a Southern billionaire. Led by these two heavyweights, the industry embarked on a primetime journey. And as audiences grew, traditions were laid to waste and loyalties compromised. For years, these two icons of entertainment would engage in head-to-head battles. And this is the story of how it all began.
And sure as shit, Way. Keith David, the narrator of the Monday Night Wars series on the WWE Network.
I can't believe that. I had no idea.
And I looked it up, and fuck, it's Keith David.
Wow. Okay.
I couldn't believe it.
I just knew him as the dad from There's Something About Mary.
Yes, he's in that. Oh, God, he's been in so much. I was looking at him like, man, I have watched so many of this guy's movies and never have remembered him.
Now you mention the voice, and it makes total sense.
I thought you knew where I was going.
No, I had no idea. That's great.
Yeah, it was amazing. So now you have an idea of the narrator of the Monday Night War. That's a terrible Keith David impression. No, I got so excited by this, I almost contacted Keith David to come onto our show. And then I didn't because I realized.
How would you do that?
I found his agent.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was like, this guy's probably above doing a podcast about a movie that came out in 1988.
I wouldn't be so sure, but okay. That's fine. We wouldn't have.
I'm very selective when it comes to interviews on this show. I don't know how much listeners want to hear interviews unless they are very contextual and add something.
Right.
And are quick. But, I always hate doing these movie reviews because I never know how we should.
Well, I mean,
we'll
just kind of talk about the general plot, and then we'll just kind of chime in here and there about what we thought.
Why don't you give us just a basic premise of Roddy Piper's character?
Yeah, sure.
And the state of Los Angeles.
Well, I was actually a little bit more curious about the circumstances surrounding this. I mean, I know Piper had left in '87 to go to Hollywood.
Yes.
And what was his relationship like with Vince at the time?
I mean, there was no connection at this point, and then Piper, he would make his way back to the WWF and also doing stuff with Portland, but...
I saw an interview with Piper afterwards where he basically, Vince basically said he wasn't very happy that this guy wanted to go to Hollywood to do movies like this, and, basically told Piper, hey, I'll have a movie for you in 4 months if you stayed. But then Piper said, not with John Carpenter, you won't. And I guess he decided to, choose this instead of
this thing. No Holds Barred could have been completely different with a Scottish villain, maybe.
And it was just like it's really quite incredible that this guy would just all of a sudden go from be plucked out of pro wrestling and be put into a starring movie like this.
It was a hell of a segue for Piper. I mean, great for him and this burgeoning acting career he believed he had at this point. But for John Carpenter to select this guy, mm-hmm. I mean, Piper must have just charmed the hell out of him. And John Carpenter said he saw something in Piper. I mean, there was a lot. John Carpenter is a very interesting director to watch his work and wanted someone authentic in this role that Piper just conveyed to him. And then just reading other stuff about this film, the fact that he hired actual homeless people for these scenes and paid them to be extras on camera just to really authenticate the scenes.
Yeah, yeah, and I think there's a bit of probably some charity, involved in that mindset as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the premise of They Live stars this guy named – he's never actually named in the movie, but –
His name is Nada.
His name is John Nada, which means nothing in
yes.
Spanish.
Yes.
And he's basically a drifter – who we see walking with a backpack towards Los Angeles. And
Hobo Piper.
Yeah, we don't really know much about him, but we basically realize that he's, kind of portraying the stereotypical lost American who has no place to go, has no job, no home, and he goes to the big city to try to find his way, through life.
Now, this all tied into me last week. Way we early on in the movie met the street preacher who was just preaching in public to all the onlookers, and I'm wondering if this was an inspiration for that guy we saw when we were walking towards Levi's Stadium. Remember that guy who was perched preaching the word of God?
Yeah, that you'll see that everywhere.
Oh, I'm sure it all comes back to that.
Oh, you think that
John
guy,
Carpenter?
That guy,
this is his impact he's having years later.
Okay, sure.
Yes, everything ties in together. Way everything makes sense. there was a funny part where he shows up looking for work on this construction site, and they inform them that this is a union job, which as a professional wrestler, you would have think Piper would have just been ecstatic for, and the fact that he probably got to enter a union legit by doing this movie, probably got his SAG card out of this.
Probably.
So multiple levels that this works on. And then he meets Frank, who has a very, very prominent role in this entire movie as kind of his, I guess, sidekick at some point after they get through their problems, which are numerous.
Yeah.
And Frank offering this guy a place to sleep at this kind of wayward home.
Homeless camp, basically.
Fed him, gave him a place to eat.
Yeah. Yeah, so... what?
No, that's all.
It's not like a reviewing matches. It's
Well, explain Frank and his character. This is a guy who's he's away from his family, who lives in Detroit. He hasn't seen them in months. So he, too, is he's more disenfranchised with the American dream, whereas Piper is presented as this guy that still does believe in the American dream and that hard work will bring him money. And that's he's going to get this wake-up call into what America is today.
For sure. From the get-go, you know, Frank becomes, you know, that very good friend character where, you know, nobody really pays much attention to Piper. They don't care if he's homeless, but this guy offers a hand and says, hey, why don't you come with me to this shelter tonight? And, you know, the shots in the movie are immediately very critical of, you know, of media in general. And that's sort of like a big theme of the movie. And critical of the rich, critical of media, where you'll see a lot of people, you know, you'll see TV shows advertising, you know, vacation destinations, and you'll see a man staring blankly at the screen as if he's hypnotized and, you know, almost portraying TV and media as brainwashing devices. And then in contrast, you see shots of people at the shelter, these homeless people who are very happy, you know, despite having nothing, no material possessions. There's a very healthy, harmonious community amongst the people that you see in these introductory shots.
Yeah, and they're watching the television, and then frequently we're getting these cut-ins where they think that the signal is all messed up, and there's a man that comes onto the screen that's essentially preaching to all of these people to try and basically break through the noise and tell them what they are consuming. And it's all coming out of this church that is situated right by this homeless area that Piper eventually stumbles onto that they are broadcasting out of and trying to break through the signal and communicate with the people.
Yeah, Piper, you know, discovers there's a church nearby this homeless shelter, and he discovers that some of the people in this homeless shelter are actually running these rebel signals, trying to hijack the TV streams back when TV was received.
Pirate television.
Yeah, pirate television. And they discover that, you know, these are people trying to, like you said, you know, break through just basically try to tell people the truth about what the media is trying to do to people. And he finds a number of props in the church, among them a box of sunglasses, which he initially does not pay that much attention to.
Yeah, and these glasses would become the focal point of the entire movie.
Yeah.
As Piper grows increasingly suspicious about this church and people being in there at 4 in the morning, and eventually it leads to him breaking into the church, and then he flees as this helicopter starts circling the area, and basically the church gets raided by the authorities.
The church gets raided, the whole homeless camp gets destroyed, and like this was, you know, very over the top, cops are bad guys. They're trying to – it basically portrays like a real authoritative society here where cops are just like using bulldozers to run over these, you know, tents and these people's homes for no apparent reason.
Yeah. There's
and choppers are like shooting.
It's a bulldozer that comes through and just destroys all of their temporary homes. And
it's interesting because like – it's actually, despite this movie being made in 1988, a lot of the imagery and a lot of the themes are constantly relevant, you know, to various parts, various times, you know, in the future. And I think it will continue to be relevant.
So this is the turning point of the movie where Piper escapes this whole chaotic situation. He has the sunglasses. And then in what is, you know, one of the biggest scenes of the entire movie, and one that is often looked back on, Piper puts on these glasses as he's in the downtown area and opens his eyes to everything that is around him. And this is where you see all of the basically the translations of all the advertising, what the messages are, which we've mentioned before. Obey, marry and reproduce, no independent thought, consume. And this is a really interesting scene. Yeah. And this is where, you know, you get the clear message of the movie and what everything is representing and what is trying to be conveyed throughout the plot of this.
Yeah, I think like the way they handled him basically realizing, you know, revealing that first he looks and sees like a vacation ad, that same vacation ad from the beginning where somebody is lying down on the beach and the ad is like, you know, enjoy the Caribbean. But then he puts on the glasses and sees that it actually says marry and reproduce. And I don't know. I just think it's like it's a wonderfully imaginative, you know, way to explain, you know, understanding media messages, but in a fun, you know, imaginative way. There's one point where he even looks at a newsstand full of magazine covers, and every magazine cover has, you know, a different message, like, you know, obey or whatever, submit. Are you familiar with the artist Shepard Fairey?
No.
You remember Obey Giant?
Yeah.
Andre the Giant.
Oh,
thing?
Right. That's yeah.
That was actually inspired by this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, which
two,
is...
It's kind of two wrestling tie-ins with Andre the Giant and
our colleague Matt Lee just walked in today. He was wearing an Obey hat.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I thought that sounded crazy. Yeah. Which sounds kind of weird.
Maybe we're wearing glasses.
Well, it's kind of weird that this Obey movement led into
such commercialism?
Merchandise being created
totally.
To support it. That part is amusing. But I found this really interesting because, I mean, if you live in a major metropolitan area, I mean, this struck me a lot when I started going to school downtown. And my God, you walk down like Young and Dundas area.
Oh, yeah.
If you literally pay attention, like, you're so just immune to advertising, but it really hits you when you go to, like, a small town where that is not the setup of your downtown area. And here, it's like, my God, it's insane.
It is, yeah. And it's not even, you know, I think the peak of it. If you go to, like, places like Tokyo or Times Square in New York, it's that much bigger. But
like, you watch Back to the Future, too. It doesn't even seem that bad in its comparison to where it is right now.
Yeah. But, I mean, again, whether or not advertising is bad, I think largely depends on the person taking in the message, you know? Like, you can just, like, kind of, I guess, you know, walk through it and maybe blindly accept it, or you can just walk through it and just ignore it, or be able to try to read more deeply into it, like, you know, John Nada here.
Yeah, well, the idea is... It's not something you have a choice of whether you have
right.
to. It's this is an obstacle given to you where you either accept it or you have to work to avoid it. I think that is the message here, is that it is just thrust upon you,
mm-hmm.
That there is no option other than to consume it.
Mm-hmm. It gets so aside from, you know, being able to decipher the true meaning behind a lot of advertisements and, you know, media. He notices when he looks at certain people that, in fact, he doesn't see humans anymore. He sees these alien-like, you know, ghoulish-like creatures in certain people.
Yes, and what did you kind of take from this of who would represent an alien versus who would represent someone that looked completely normal when wearing the sunglasses?
It would be people like, you know, businessmen, older businessmen, or basically aristocratic, rich, upper-class people that would appear as the ghosts. And then the commoners, you know, like the clerk at the newsstand would be a regular human, or the person, the shopkeeper would be a human. But only the upper class would be the aliens.
So this is when Piper takes a dramatic turn from the purveyor of the American dream into a masochist who just attacks a bunch of cops, murders a bunch of cops.
Who all appears to be Martian through the glasses.
Yes. And proceeds to go into a convenience store and utter the infamous line that is repeated so often. I've come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass, and I'm all out of bubblegum.
Apparently he came up with this on set.
I don't doubt it.
Like an improvised Piper original creation on set. I thought Piper was awesome here, you know, because you've seen in his wrestling work that he's great at looking distraught and he's great at looking angry. And I thought he was just a great choice for something like this, a scene specifically like this where he basically has to do both those things.
He was in a flower shop mode when he was coming back against Adrian Adonis.
Yes.
And instead he had a rifle instead of a bat.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where he just goes on this insane killing spree of these aliens.
And then he sees that one of these aliens is able to talk into her watch to communicate with presumably other aliens. And this woman says, "We got one that can see."
And
this whole movie just all of a sudden turns from, like, you know, your typical, American drifter movie into a sci-fi. Like, it turns into a sci-fi alien movie.
Yeah, you take the alien aspect out of this where you accept that aliens are just can just be murdered. They are not considered humans. You take that element out of the way, Roddy Piper is like, it just turns into a Columbine or something.
Oh, exactly. And I think that was the point.
Yeah.
The point is to show you that to the people who are quote-unquote blind, they just see a crazy man. They see a terrorist. But to somebody who, you know, can see the truth, they're actually fighting for the truth. And it's really interesting, you know, because I'm sure if you talk to actual terrorists or any like criminals in the world, they'll tell you that they're fighting for the truth.
Well, and that's where if you want to go to a deeper message here is Roddy Piper's character that views these people and completely just categorizes them all as evil.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no idea of what the opposing point of view is. It's just, well, they're part of the problem.
They're aliens.
They're aliens. They're literally aliens to me. They mean nothing. They have no nothing positive to provide life. I mean, that's kind of a fucked up message.
But you're suggesting that these aliens could actually be benefiting Earth, benefiting humans.
Well, I mean, that would be to say these people that are hiding as humans, I mean, how different would that be than if they weren't seen as aliens? They were just people running banks and we can go in and murder CEOs. That's the message here.
Oh, yeah.
Is that these people that are running the world are lifeless forms that can be disposed without any kind of conscience required.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, politically, this is a very left-leaning movie. And I'll say...
Really?
Yeah. Well, I'll say, like, I think depending on where you personally stand, you'll agree with some of this or you won't. But in the end, it's all just entertainment. You know what I mean? You don't have to think that deeply about it.
Fuck, man.
What?
I wanted a hippie in this movie badly.
Yeah.
It's kind of – that was the closest we got was Piper. This is when we're introduced to Holly Thompson, who is taken hostage by Piper. I'm just going to refer to him as Piper throughout this movie.
Yeah.
And is then put into a car. She was the one speaking into the wristwatch.
No, she wasn't.
Wasn't she?
No.
Oh, then I have my the people mixed up.
That was an actual alien. This is just some random girl that Piper kidnaps to, you know, get him to drive.
And then she turns out to be the assistant program director for Cable 54.
But she appears to be actually human through the glasses. That's why Piper trusts her.
And then he informs her to take him to her house.
Yeah.
As we get into a weird...
Things get kind of sexual here, you know? Like sort of rapey sexual with, like, this woman kind of just calmly accepting all this, you know, letting this guy take her hostage. And, in fact...
This was not subtle. I mean, this was the total tone of the scene.
It makes you totally. And it makes you wonder, man, what's with this woman? There's something, you know, that she's not revealing that, you know, must be up.
They get to the home and he goes to get a drink. And that's when Holly attacks him and hits him in the back of the head. And Piper proceeds to fall through a window, falling minimum two stories to the cement. And in pure action form, essentially dusts himself off, and he recovers pretty miraculously.
He's got a limp. That's about it.
Just more than Vin Diesel had after driving off a cliff. So the sunglasses, though, are left behind in the apartment, and we also hear from Piper kind of the properties that these glasses possess, that they give him a bit of a high as a result of wearing them too long. Mm-hmm. And there's like a come down from this high.
Yeah, and I'm trying to figure out like metaphorically what that means, what the director is trying to say with that, you know? Like if you think about this stuff too much, you'll get sick, maybe.
Yeah, maybe it's a drug to be able to expose the world and all of its secrets, but with it comes a toll.
Perhaps.
Piper eventually finds Frank, and Frank is his ally that he believes he can convert and show him what these glasses can display so that he has someone on his side. But Frank wants none of this. Frank thinks this guy's full of shit. He gives Piper his week's pay, and this is where he's trying to convince Frank of this. And Frank just responds, "Look, you crazy mother." Frank was not having any of this. And
you should actually do it in the Monday Night Wars voice, though.
"You crazy mother." And then we get the infamous fight scene from this particular movie that has sure stood the test of time, because when I was chatting with Dan Lebransky, he immediately was like, "What'd you think of the fight scene?"
This is the first thing everybody says when you mention They Live. This fight scene is one of, if not still, the longest fight in cinema history. And watching
how long was it?
I didn't actually time it. I think it was like maybe five.
I shockingly didn't either.
You shouldn't have brought your stopwatch.
It's the closest we have to a match.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, it's so oddly out of place because it's in the middle of the movie. It's not even the final scene. It's just a fight in the middle that, because there's so many peaks and valleys of it, you think it's over. You think that they arrive at a resolution. He's going to put on the glasses. But then nope. Like the match just keeps going.
And let's just recap what Wade just said. I mean, not since Edge and Booker T fought over a shampoo commercial has there been a fight over stupider stipulations than placing the sunglasses on a man. I can't believe TNA never did this match.
Listen, stupid on the surface, but if you actually watch that Zizeka analysis, he makes a great point about how this is actually, you know, symbolic of the struggle for somebody who is, quote-unquote, being lied to, the struggle to teach somebody the truth and the reluctance of, you know, a person who doesn't know the truth from wanting to stay that way, not wanting to learn. So it actually – I think it actually, you know, made sense that this took so long.
The sound effects were the key to me of just the – I don't know if you ever remember, but when I was a kid – 1 year for Christmas, my parents got me the WWF microphone. And the WWF microphone, it had like an option of like 4 or 5 sound effects that you could press on the side, and it was like grunt, groan, like ooh, ugh. That's what this was like, these punches. It was just the WWF microphone. And this
– can you go through – how many notes did you take of the actual fight?
I'm going to read them verbatim here, okay? Piper shows up at work and finds Frank. He tells him it wasn't people he killed. Cops searching for him. Searches blah, 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 blah. Frank punches him as he tries to give him glasses. Piper punches back. Another shit fight sequence with terrible sound effects. Frank drops him. Goes for dick punch. And Frank calls him a dirty motherfucker. Frank tosses glasses away. More fighting. Back suplex by Piper.
Yeah, they worked in a belly to back suplex.
Fighting, grunts, eye gouge to Frank. Repeated knees to the balls of Piper.
That was the best part.
2x4 versus glass bottle. Kimura by Piper. Piper slammed on the cement and ends with Frank saying, "Fuck you," as he places the glasses onto Piper's chest. This played out a lot like...
And that wasn't even the end of it.
No.
That was like partway through.
This played a lot like a Family Guy with Peter and the chicken.
Oh, okay. No, I don't want
the exaggerated fight scene.
But this fight scene has actually been referenced a number of times, including an episode of South Park where Timmy and Jimmy have a fight, and the directors or the producers of South Park basically redid this whole thing, like shot for shot, but with two South Park characters.
You're right. As I go to my next page, there are more notes here. This fight continues after 2 breaks, and Piper delivers a gut-wrench suplex to Frank and puts the sunglasses on. Then I wrote stipulation match idea. Frank sees the aliens and says, "Brother, life's a bitch," and she's back in heat.
Like, so fucking.
I hope that was another improv line from Piper.
I mean, I would only hope so, because
brother, life's a bitch, and she's back in heat.
Goddamn, they're so cheesy, but they're also so quotable and memorable. This scene apparently took 2 weeks of rehearsals and 3 days of filming just for this one scene alone. And Piper also talked about how, you know, they, instead of like shooting this whole thing in chunks like the people would typically do in a action movie, they were kind of forced to memorize everything as one long sequence, much like, you know, I guess certain wrestling matches. And, you know, Piper obviously was a perfect choice for something like this, for an action scene. But I think, what is it, Keith David, you know, was apparently more than held his own too.
So then we have the coming together of Piper and Frank. They have settled their differences, and now it's a lot like Sting and Triple H after their no disqualification match. There's sledgehammers involved. There's just a big lengthy battle, and they shake hands afterwards.
Exactly. Well, I mean, this is a not necessarily that example, but like what also made this fight scene unique was the fact that it was between two friends and not a bad guy and a good guy. So you had double babyface.
Yeah, what Frank was necessarily resisting, I can't really tell you.
He's resisting the truth. He's resisting. I mean, here's a fucking crazy guy who basically, you know, quit his job and almost, you know, you just gave money to him, and the guy's like, the guy's fucking crazy.
I would have just obeyed. I would have just put the glasses on, let this lunatic get his what he needs, and then I'm going to throw these glasses back at him. They checked into a hotel room. We get the life story of Piper running away as a child, being cut by his father with a razor blade, and giving a more human element to the Roddy Piper character. And now we have the cops that are out searching for Piper. And
then they meet up with the other rebels in the safe house.
That's right.
And instead of sunglasses, now they're given contact lenses.
Contact lenses to replace the glasses.
Yeah, which don't have as much feedback.
And there's a touching moment with Holly and Piper, who are reunited, where Holly says, "I thought I killed you." And she apologizes for this misstep.
There's one part here where the rebel leader meets them and talks about how, you know, now the aliens have a lot of humans on their side. And he says that the aliens have been doing this by giving humans incentive through promotions and raises.
Also, to the political element of this, the human cops that are kind of under the spell of the alien cops. God, I feel people who have not watched this movie are going to be lost. But they have been instructed that the rebels are communists.
Right.
So to give them the reason to this very much goes back to what you talk about, where like a large group are trained to hate a specific group of people, and they are given reasons that you would not. They're communists. Boom. End of story. They are the bad guys.
And again, this movie was made, you know, more so, I think, as a criticism of Reaganomics in the 80s. But again, very relevant today, and really at many times in society, where you can look at, you know, whatever, like look at the Middle East and you know, see how, you know, a lot of media will largely kind of whatever, Korea, you know, like will villainize a certain group of people to try to get people to, you know, join our cause.
And your consumers want a simple answer. Who's good? Who's bad? Yep. That's essentially what they want in the most complicated of issues. They just want, well, who's on the good side? Who's on the bad side? Mm-hmm. And that's typically an easy sell on people.
That's pro wrestling. That's the whole thing.
It very much is. Yeah. So anyway, the rebels are all under attack from the police. There's a big shootout as they find their the housing that they're in.
A bunch of unimportant characters are immediately killed.
And all the main characters escape this rapid gunfire. It was incredible. The reflexes of a cat. Big shootout here. Piper just going crazy with an automatic. Holly goes missing. And then we find the wristwatch, which leads them to this hole in the ground that they enter into this underground spot.
The secret teleportation passageway.
Yes. Much more scientific clarification from Wei. And they end up in this large ballroom where there's this like formal dinner going on.
Through a series of tunnels, they arrive at this ballroom.
And it's full of aliens, which they can see with the contact lenses on.
Yes, that's right. Room full of aliens, who appeared to be dressed as, you know, very upper class aristocratic people. And this was some sort of like almost meeting of the what they call the human power elite.
It's the 1%.
Yes.
The underground terrorist network has now been destroyed. The guy in the tuxedo is giving them a tour of all of the underground area that they're now in.
The guy in the tuxedo is actually the guy from the homeless shelter, one of their actual people formerly from the homeless shelter who's now converted.
They also have this area where they can teleport people instead of having to use planes.
Yeah, this is like the portal to Earth, and you come to understand that the aliens have, you know, decided to conquer Earth much like they want to conquer other planets.
So Piper and Frank eventually pull the guns, shoot down guards. They are looking for the studio where all of this is happening.
Yeah, we learn that basically the brains of the whole alien takeover are within this cable TV channel.
Who thought cable access could have this kind of a power?
Oh, who thought TV would have this type of power? How do I know you're not a fucking alien?
Makes you really think what the Fight Network is, doesn't it, huh?
Nobody. What are we trying? What are
who
we
cares?
Convince people.
There's a grenade that goes off. Always a fun part in any kind of a movie. They open fire in the studio on everyone. They're searching for Holly, who is armed. They gun down the aliens. Finally, they find Holly on the 21st floor, and they go to the roof. Piper goes up first, but then Holly turns.
Turns, stays behind, and puts a gun to Frank's chin.
And the best part of this was like right out of Scarface, where they pan away from the dude being massacred in the hotel, where you don't actually see it, but you just hear it. You just hear the gunshot go off. You know what's happened, but you don't see it.
There's a real lack of blood in this movie.
Oh, it was like Furious 7. There's a no blood policy, like, apparently, in that movie.
Exactly, yeah. So a lot of assumed killing.
Well, it's very dangerous in this day and age to be doing blood. So Frank is dead, presumably. He lost this war, but he would come back to narrate another one. And Holly then comes up to the roof, and this is where the big reveal is. Frank is dead. Holly says that he cannot win, so he drops the gun, but he has one hidden in order to shoot Holly. And then he turns around, shoots the signal, and it explodes. The satellite explodes from a bullet, and then Piper, the coup de grace, so to speak.
There's a chopper this whole time aiming at Piper and shooting him as he's shooting the satellite.
And he gives the satellite the middle finger.
Great. Awesome.
The only way Roddy Piper could truly triumph.
An awesome final shot, because like you just see this man dying on the ground, and then like at the edge of the frame sneaks in his middle finger, and that was his last scene. So,
and now the residual effects of this is that all people can now see the aliens. The signal has been destroyed to hide their identities. So now everyone is exposed to the world. And they show these random clips, including a commentary on television where they're talking about people like John Carpenter who need to show restraint. And it ends with this naked woman riding a dude who turns out to be an alien. And the alien, not realizing he's been exposed, literally and figuratively, saying, "Hey, what's wrong, baby?" And that's how the movie ends. I think a fitting end. Do you know what you're fucking? That was the purveying message here. Do you know who is fucking with you? The media is fucking with you.
Right. Nice. Do you know? Yeah, exactly.
They have inserted themselves into your life, into your body. They consume everything of you, and now you can see what you've allowed into your conscious.
Ooh.
That was the heaviest scene to me, was the final scene.
Yeah. You know, overall, I think this is – you can consider it a B-movie, but
– I feel I could have done a whole semester of this in university.
Oh, this would have been a great thing.
We did this during that history of film course we took.
But I thought this movie was just really fun, and it definitely lived up to my expectations, which honestly weren't really that high. I mean, I thought it was just a fun little concept, but I wasn't really ready for, like, I guess how I don't know how thought-provoking the whole movie was. And I thought it was really good and probably not taken as seriously for a number of reasons. I mean, the acting overall wasn't really – was pretty bad. But I thought Piper was actually very well cast as the lead, you know, somebody who's able to play paranoid and a rebellious badass at the same time. But, I mean, you can also maybe consider that maybe his hiring – probably maybe even hurt the credibility of the movie, you know, just simply having a pro wrestler in a starring role, I'm sure wasn't the best for a lot of executives.
Yeah, but it's a movie that I think in hindsight a lot of people take seriously. Especially the time it came out in 1988, it was a very thought-provoking film and one that is still referenced today by numerous film critics, and whether you're looking at just political commentary that comes out of this movie. So it's one that certainly was one of the most interesting pieces that John Carpenter ever put together.
Certainly, like, if we're just, you know, on a wrestling podcast talking about the genre of pro wrestler movies, I mean, I can't really think of many that are more, complex, you know, I guess you could say, or even well done than this one.
Yeah. The true test will be how many people hate this podcast. I think that'll be the barometer.
Who cares?
I don't give
a shit. Listen, we just reviewed a lot of wrestling. I really like this.
This was a great call, Wei. Yeah. I was glad. I don't think, you know, it's something that would have come to mind if you had not brought it up. And I had never seen this movie, so I was glad to go back and watch it. I'll give it an 8 out of 10. I was very happy with it. I watched it in one sitting.
Oh,
I sat
too.
Down. I was only going to watch a little bit, and then I ended up watching the whole thing.
I give it an 8.5. And, yeah, it's fun. It's fun to watch this movie. It's fun to talk about it. And it's fun to watch a lot of the, you know, a lot of people's interpretations of you know, what this movie is. They had a 25th anniversary re-release, I think, 2 years ago.
Yep.
And I think it sort of received a bit of a resurgence at that point.
Can you imagine if this took Roddy Piper into like this whole different – like he never came back to wrestling and he became like a political activist based on this role?
Keith David, I watched a panel discussion with this afterwards, and Keith David talks about how for the 2 weeks that it came out, it was the number one movie, and then 2 weeks afterwards it completely disappeared from theaters, and they presumed that it had perhaps pissed off somebody I guess in Hollywood.
Oh, wow. Not consume this.
I don't know. I don't know.
This should have been a free movie. Kind of goes against the whole message. I shouldn't have charged tickets.
Sure.
Capitalism at its finest. All right. We don't have a ton of feedback, but we will read what people had to say. Jim Powers. Welcome back, gents. I really enjoyed this movie. Interesting to see that Piper was asked to bring so much to the character, especially in a pre-diehard Arnold and Sly action hero era, where the star was never in peril and was always in control, let alone dying at the end of the movie, albeit a victorious death. Hell of a fight scene, too. And who would have guessed that it would spawn all of that Shepard Fairey Obey stuff, one of Duke Nukem's signature lines, and countless other bizarre things that drew inspiration from this. For decades, this stood as unquestionably the best movie a wrestler's ever been involved with, an argument that still holds up today, a strong 8 out of 10.
G. Hall, Obey. Seriously, nice choice for a review. I hope you guys enjoy this movie. It was an epic part of my childhood, seeing the rowdy one on the big screen after watching him run around with the rock and roll era. It kind of broke the fourth wall as a lad. I love this film. I wonder how it holds up in this day.
Brad from Whitby writes, truly 80s cheese at its best. Piper was a pretty horrible actor when it came to delivering serious dialogue, but he can spew one-liners like a true action hero. My favorite being when Frank puts on the glasses after the epic alley fight and Piper says, brother, life's a bitch, and she's back in heat. It makes no sense for the situation, but seems oddly appropriate for some reason. And the guy that Wei mentioned broke down the fight scene physiology perfectly. It makes so much more sense now. The hidden gem in this movie was definitely Keith David, who played Frank. He gave this movie some much-needed credibility. Him and Piper had an odd couple comedy duo-type vibe, like when they strolled into the motel to ask for a room. Here's a fun little fact. The communicators, the alien guards use in the final battle are the PKE meters from the Ghostbusters movies. You guys picked a great review this week. Please do more movies like this in the future. I give this movie 6 failed wrestler movie careers out of 10.
Finally, we got a Rich in Winnipeg who says, They Live, a movie so cult popular, South Park did the fight scene note for note in the classic episode Cripple Fight. This was a parody of an old 50s alien... 50s alien invasion movies, but with classic Carpenter violence and humor. Is the Keith David in this movie the same one that narrates the Monday Night Wars? Yes. Lastly, I know this belongs in the request thread, but since you guys are looking at wrestling-related movies, how about a crack at some El Santo movies, in particular El Santo versus La Hija del Dr. Frankenstein? Anyway, this gets a 7.5. Put the glasses on out of 10.
All right. That's going to end our review of both Furious 7 and They Lived. You got a bonus hidden review if you downloaded this show. Amazing. You never know what you're going to get. But I don't know what we're going to get next week. Is there anything that really...
yeah, it's your choice. This was mine.
So. Oh, boy. Well, I'm going to... you know, I would really like to go back, if you're down for it, to review some more of the New Japan shows on Access. Do you feel like watching?
Absolutely.
Okay. I want to make sure we don't pick one that we already have done. So let me just quickly pull up what we reviewed the last time. If you haven't heard already, Access has renewed New Japan for a second season. So they're going to be doing 12 additional episodes. In fact, the final episode of season one is this Friday night, which is going to feature... I don't even know off the top of my head. I have all the match listings written somewhere here. But they're going to take a break and then come back May 22nd for 12 more episodes.
And is the intent to like eventually catch up, or are they just going to basically kind
of
like...
I think it's never going to be completely up to date just because of the production that goes into having to voice them. But they're going to have them like 6 months out, which is a pretty good timeline in terms of having it up to date. And the next season is going to mainly focus on just the end of last year's Super Juniors tournament, the Dominion show, and then a ton of last year's G1.
Cool.
And this year's G1, by the way, if people have not heard, it is going to take place over the course of 28 days. And this year they are going to do 19 G1 shows.
Holy shit. And you'll get to see all of them. On New Japan
World. You can see all of them on New Japan World.
And you'll be, does that mean you'll be doing 19 podcasts?
No comment. When I read that, I was like, holy Christ, I don't know about this. Okay, last time we reviewed episodes 2 and 3. And
what are the big matches that...
I'm going to pull them up right now because I have all the listings here for season 1. New Japan Access cards. Okay. So this weekend's or this Friday's final one is the Okada AJ Styles match from Yokohama Arena. Now 2 and 3 were here. We can go.
Yeah, you tell me which matches you're most excited about to see with commentary.
A lot of these. You know what? Let's just stay in. Okay, the last one we did, we did Tanahashi and Okada from Invasion Attack. Why don't we just continue with the next two because they're both really good. We've got – and Prince Devitt's on both of them.
Cool.
So let's – 2 episodes cool?
Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely. So we're going to review episodes 4 and 5, which were Okada and Togi Makabe and Tanahashi against Prince Devitt. And then the following week's episode was Okada and Prince Devitt as well as a – 8-man tag with Tanahashi, Makabe, Jushin Liger, Captain New Japan taking on Carl Anderson, El Terrible, Tama Tonga, and Bad Luck Fale. So they aired on February the 6th and 13th. We will post this up on the message board. So next week, episodes 4 and 5 of New Japan Pro Wrestling on Access TV. That's going to wrap things up. Is there anything we can go out with, Mr. Ting? Let people know that if they missed Review of Raw... where they can go catch it.
You can now catch Review Raw both on this podcast feed, wherever you chose to download this podcast, of course. But you can also catch it now with video at our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Fight Network.
Yes, youtube.com/Fight Network. It will be up there each week. If you just like listen to the audio version, there's no difference. So you can still get download it on iTunes.
It's a slightly condensed version. So let's say you don't really have the hour and a half that it takes to listen to a full podcast. You just want the meat and bones of, you know, our actual review. Watch the video or listen to the video. Or you can also, of course, catch us on the Fight Network if you have that available. We are in a free preview for the whole month of April in Canada. So if you get the Fight Network, tune in on Tuesdays at 11 a.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Eastern, repeat. And By the way, Gonzaga Crow Cop, the only place in Canada you can get it this week.
Yes, we've got the main card airing on Fight Network this Saturday, 3 p.m. Eastern time. The main card starts. We're also doing our preview shows, which I've been blown away by. They're, to be honest, you know, taking ourselves out of this. These are very good shows.
They're actually, yeah, we're very proud of it. And the people that work here put in a lot of effort into doing these shows. They're genuine fans and they think about it, I mean, really well, really well. You guys do a great job. And of course, TNA, Friday nights,
9 o'clock Eastern time. No follow-up on the status of James Storm's barn. But everything else on Impact is there. Friday nights at 9 o'clock Eastern in Canada. I've had some people from the U.S. contact me saying, hey, you didn't have Impact on Friday night. Yes, it's a Canadian television deal. We can, if you realize how television rights work, we cannot get the U.S. rights to Impact because Destination America has them. But you can watch it in Canada.
Yeah.
Enjoy. All right. Next week, once again, episodes 4 and 5 of New Japan Pro Wrestling on Access TV. We'll be reviewing those two episodes, taking your feedback. All our regular shows are up at liveaudiowrestling.com. The Law, Sunday nights, 11 p.m. Eastern time. And you can also check out the video interview I did with Bully Ray, the full interview. You heard most of it on Sunday's Law, the video up this week as well at youtube.com/fightnetwork. For Way, I'm John.
Obey.
Consume.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum. Oh, shit. Oh.